the truth. The whole truth and nothing but the truth.
All rights reserved and affirmed.
Creole minds. These are weapons of mass descent.
These are weapons of mass descent.
Welcome to Uprising, a daily digest of independent news analysis, investigation, education, artistic expression, and activism. It's Monday, March 17th, 2008, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar.
It just makes me stop and
it just makes me stop and
it just
think.
Makes me stop and
it just makes me,
just
stop,
makes
and
me
think.
Stop and think.
Silence is not an option.
A new report reveals potentially dangerous nanoparticles being used in food and food packaging. A Filipino mother tells the story of her son's abduction and the ongoing persecution of activists in her nation, plus an exclusive in-studio interview with feminist Cuban hip-hoppers Las Crudas.
This is Uprising.
Good morning and welcome to Uprising. A new report by Friends of the Earth has found that so-called nanomaterials are being used in popular food products and food packaging without any warning to the public or new testing by the Food and Drug Administration. Materials made using nanotechnology can include more potent food colorings, flavorings and nutritional additives, antibacterial ingredients for food packaging, and more potent agrochemicals and fertilizers. Preliminary studies have shown that nanomaterials are much more chemically reactive than larger particles and can potentially wreak havoc when ingested. Neither the U.S. Food and Drug Administration nor the Environmental Protection Agency have recognized nanomaterials to be new chemicals or have required any new oversight of them. The report by Friends of the Earth, called Out of the Laboratory and Onto Our Plates, asserts that this technology can potentially cause organ damage and a decreased immune system response. FOE found nanomaterials in Miller Light Beer, Cadbury Chocolate Packaging, and Toddler Health, a nutritional drink powder for infants, sold at Whole Foods and other health food stores. My guest is Ian Illuminato. He is the co-author of the report and a health and environment campaigner with Friends of the Earth. Welcome to Uprising, Ian.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks very much for joining us. First, let's start with the basics. What exactly are nanoparticles? How are they made and how big are they?
Okay, well, nanoparticles are basically the science of the very small and the science that deals with the manipulation of atoms and very, very small particles, basically the building blocks of life. So just to give people an idea of how small a nanoparticle is, if you imagine yourself as a nanoparticle and you were standing next to a red blood cell, that blood cell would be 7 miles long. So this is extremely small stuff, and it also helps when thinking about how it may interact with our bodies to think of nanoparticles and these structures and systems at this scale at the size of viruses. So therefore being able to actually, they're small enough to interact with our DNA.
So what is the reason that corporations would be interested in manufacturing nanomaterials and using them in food and food packaging? I mean, isn't naturally produced foods enough, or is there another reason? And particularly, is there a profit motive?
Well, a lot of this we don't know. Unfortunately, industry isn't really good at communicating why it's using this technology, and they're not really good at communicating a lot of the safety risks that we're concerned about. But we have seen through studies that some nanoparticles can be a lot more potent than normal bulk scale ingredients. So, for example, you know, can make foods that are supposed to be white even whiter through titanium dioxide at the nanoscale, and certain flavors even more potent. So we think it's a pretty cheap way to make processed foods, or those foods that do gain a large profit, a lot easier to make and sell, especially considering some of the packaging uses for nanotechnology. It allows those companies to store those products for a longer period of time and also allows supermarkets to keep it on their shelves longer.
So is it true that nanoparticles can be used in the waxy material that you find on the skin of apples to just keep them fresher longer?
We didn't find anything in our report, but conceptually that could be possible. And in fact, a lot of we're seeing so much investment from companies that we wouldn't be surprised if that could happen. But right now it's, for example, in Cadbury chocolate, some of that wrapping for some of those chocolates. Nanoadhesives are being used in burger containers at McDonald's. And Miller Beer, for example, is using nanocomposite barriers in their beer bottles to make them stronger and able to last longer.
So what are the potential dangers of nanoparticles? Why, you know, could they be dangerous even though they are so tiny?
Well, basically, what we're calling for is more studies in this area. And if you look at how much our government is investing right now in nanotechnology research and development, a very, very tiny portion of that is going into understanding what are the effects when these particles are consumed by humans and when they're out in the environment. So there are very, very little studies, and a lot of, you know, to say nanoparticles are dangerous or not at this point is would have to be mostly speculation. But we do have enough primary studies that are showing some definite red flags. For example, there's different types of nanoparticles, such as buckyballs or fullerenes, that have shown to be quite toxic to rats when they were inhaled and very damaging for their lungs. There's titanium dioxide nanoparticles that have shown to be toxic to water fleas and algae, which are important nutrition for different kinds of animals in water. And there's also different tests that show that nanoparticles pretty much have unprecedented access to different parts of our body and can actually go through the blood-brain barrier and into our DNA and actually change our DNA and mutate it and damage it in different ways. So we do have some studies that are showing that these particles can do some pretty interesting, funky things.
So
we don't have a full picture of what that entails.
So even potentially cancer-causing?
Yes, yes, for sure. And there's there are some studies linking nanoparticles to Crohn's disease, which basically leads to cancer.
My guest is Ian Illuminato. He's the health and environment campaigner with Friends of the Earth and co-author of the report Out of the Laboratory and Onto Our Plates. We're talking about nanotech particles that Friends of the Earth found in the food chain from grocery aisles to agricultural chemicals. Now, I understand Friends of the Earth found 104 of these products. How exactly did you find them? Did you just sort of randomly test items? And how does one test for nanoparticles if they're so tiny?
That's definitely an issue. We ourselves didn't test these products. A lot of the information we got was from websites or from manufacturers that basically were coming out and saying that they were using them. And also the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., they have a project on emerging nanotechnologies. And on their website, they have over 600 products listed that they've researched to find that include nanoparticles in those products. So we took a lot from that list as well.
Now, is a food that might be certified organic, which is something that the FDA regulates, could that contain nanoparticles?
Yes, potentially it could. And you asked about testing, and in fact, there's no current testing methods that are really reliable and cheap for nano. So a lot of what we're asking for is that the government be investing in different ways to understand, you know, where nanoparticles are, and just to have a better understanding of where they're going and what they're doing.
Once these have been unleashed, basically, they could just, you know, as you said, they can pass essentially through human tissue because they're so small. Do nanoparticles break down after a time, or do they have a really long life period?
We just don't know. There are soluble versus insoluble particles, and basically...
So it depends on how they're designed.
Yeah, yeah. So, for example, titanium dioxide that is used in sunscreens, those nanoparticles are insoluble, so they're meant to stay the way they are for a really long time, so they don't kind of melt away in a sense. And that can definitely be a concern in terms of, you know, where do they end up, how long do they last, and how do they interact with our bodies and the environment. And we just know so very little that it really is the case for government to retract these products from the market, give it some time, and understand. We need to understand a lot more before I would ever at least personally feel comfortable coming into contact with this technology.
So why is the FDA and or the EPA not regulating these if they're entering the food chain? And is there any call from Congress to either to have some kind of regulating or longer testing period or even just labeling of food items that contain nanoparticles?
Yeah, we think that definitely labeling should be the bare minimum. But to be quite blunt, we think that industry has a big say in what our government regulates and has a big say in what our government does. And nano is a big industry, and it's being hyped as the second industrial revolution. So there's a lot of promise within there, but there's also potentially a lot of harm that could come out of this technology. And right now it seems that any type of regulation could, you know, cause consumers to be afraid of this technology, and that might not be good for business or the next couple-year outlook for business, which I think is, you know, to try to put this in as many products as possible and to try to sell as much as possible. So I guess when, you know, making money is your priority, human safety and environmental safety come second to that.
What about stores like Whole Foods? I imagine they would stop carrying the food that I mentioned earlier, toddler health, the infant nutritional drink powder that has nanomaterials. I mean, if they were made aware of your report and that this item contains nanomaterials, wouldn't they stop carrying it, you think?
And Whole Foods is developing different standards for their products in their stores. So we are beginning to interact with them and on the topic of nanotechnology. So we really do encourage stores such as Whole Foods to put a ban on these products until we learn more about them. And that's something that we definitely want to develop, and we'll keep you all updated on.
You know, it seems as though, you know, we've just barely dealt with or are still dealing with the corporate control over the food industry that has given us things like artificial food colorings and flavorings, genetically modified foods, irradiation of foods, antibiotics, pesticides. I mean, it goes on and on. The corporate control over our food chain has resulted in so much harmful interference with our food. And now this, I mean, how are consumers supposed to navigate through and actually find healthy foods to eat?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more difficult. And that's definitely one of our major concerns, is that more than just a technology, this is a revolution and an idea on behalf of business. To continue to strengthen the way that they feel humans should consume and buy food. And if we look at this, what this technology is meant to do in terms of packaging, it's meant to have it's meant to support our current food systems, which are basically, you know, let's ship food all around the world, which is definitely not positive for our climate, and let's keep foods highly processed and in packaging, which is definitely not, you know, the right decision for our bodies and the health of our bodies or the environment. So we do believe that this technology is going to re-solidify and reinforce some of what you just mentioned, some of that dissatisfaction.
Now, Europeans are generally more discerning or more aware or more activist, I'm not sure, you know, about their food supply than Americans, it seems. Has nanotechnology entered the European food market? And if so, how are Europeans reacting?
Yes, it has. And our colleagues released a similar report the day before we did. And so they also had a list you can check out on the Friends of the Earth website, the European Friends of the Earth website, and they have a list of different foods that are being used in Europe. And right now, I think because of this issue is just coming to light in Europe as well, I'm sure that we'll start to hear some of the comments from the public over there which I could imagine could not be very positive, especially because this is kind of in line with genetic modification.
Finally, Ian, what do you suggest listeners do? I mean, is it basically pressuring Congress to label this technology?
Yeah, I would definitely write to, you know, local government, federal government, and in the meantime, I would steer away from highly processed foods and really take as many raw organic ingredients as you can and make your own food at home as much as possible, because at this point, there's really no way to know where this stuff is and what it's going to do. So kind of lay low with the food that you have a feeling is good, whether you know where it's produced. It's always good to know where your food's being produced. So if you have access to local farms that are selling vegetables and foods, I would definitely go to them as a first option. And also, we definitely recommend interacting with your local grocer and interacting on several things. One, you know, banning nano in food or asking their suppliers to not put nanotechnology in their food, and also asking their suppliers to use less packaging, because a lot of the packaging, in fact, does contain nano, and packaging generally is just extremely bad for the environment.
Well, Ian, I want to thank you very much for joining us today, and I imagine listeners can get the report on your website, foe.org.
Yep,
thanks.
For sure.
Great.
And also, if anybody has further questions, feel free to contact us here. We work in Washington, D.C., and are happy to answer questions.
Thank you so much again, Ian.
Thank you.
Ian Illuminato is health and environment campaigner with Friends of the Earth and co-author of the report Out of the Laboratory and Onto Our Plates. We'll link to that report from our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. You can get it directly from foe.org. You are listening to Uprising. Later in the hour, we'll be joined by the three members of Las Crudas, Cuban hip-hoppers, and we'll also hear this week's Empire Notes. And after this radical day in history, we'll hear from a mother whose son was disappeared in the Philippines. Stay tuned.
KPFK staff, volunteers, and listener sponsors will be gathering Thursday, March 20th, 2008 for the first in KPFK's new benefit concert series. Perhaps you'll be there. We're celebrating the spring equinox with dance, food, fun, conversation, spiritual healing, and live music from hip-hop revolutionaries X-Clan. Abracadabra. A la baby professor. Legendary Brazilian jazz rock fusionist Ayrton Moreira and Flora Purim. Featuring Identity and Jose Neto. Folkloric Afro-Cuban rhythms and chants from Odo Olo Ilu Ire with vocalist Craig Ramos. Soulful hip-hop rock from the bright young ensemble Elevators. And transcendent improvisations by Miguel Atwood Ferguson, Nick Rosen, and Dexter Story with special guests. Alongside KPFK DJs Mark Maxwell of Rise, Mark Torres of Travel Tips for Atzlan, Derek Rath of Cosmic Barrio, Steve Martin of Mood to Swing, DJ Delfinus of The Dark Room, DJ Counterstrike of Divine Forces Radio, DJ Namde Mueta of Aphrodisia, Teddy Robinson of Stairway to Heaven, and more. KPFK hosts Maggie LaPique of Global Village, Sam Brown of For the Record, Fidel Rodriguez of Divine Forces Radio, Jerry Quickly of Beneath the Surface, Armando Gudinho, Program Director of KPFK, Jim Lafferty of the Lawyers Guild and KPFK's Interim General Manager, and more. KPFK's Spring Equinox Benefit Concert is going down Thursday, March 20th, 2008, from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. at Crash Mansion. All proceeds from this event go to KPFK. For more info, please visit kpfk.org.
People, the time has come.
This is your Radio News reporter, Crystal Graham. On this day, March 17th, in 1912, American civil rights activist Bayard Rustin was born in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Rustin's political organizing career was very dynamic. Throughout his life, he protested and campaigned against segregation laws, fought an alliance with the Japanese Americans in U.S. internment camps, organized against British rule in India and Africa, and advocated for gay rights. After adopting a strict nonviolent philosophy, Rustin counseled civil rights icon Martin Luther King Jr. and helped form the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. from which he was later forced to resign because he was openly gay. Due to his sexuality, Rustin was largely written out of civil rights history, and his enormous influence was heavily silenced. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you to never let the past slip away.
Welcome back to Uprising. Edith Burgos, a mother of a missing activist, is currently on a month-long tour of the United States to demand justice for her son and for all disappeared persons in the Philippines. Sponsored by various Philippines human rights organizations, the tour is aimed at raising awareness of the abuses committed under the regime of President Gloria Macapagal Arroyo. During the Washington, D.C. leg of her trip, Burgos visited the offices of numerous congressional lawmakers in the hopes that they would reconsider U.S. aid to the Philippines military. It was members of the Philippine Army that abducted her son Jonas, a farmers' rights activist, nearly 1 year ago. Seeking accountability, she submitted to the Philippines Court of Appeals a military document that said that her son had been, quote, neutralized. The family has continually faced harassment in the course of seeking justice. Unfortunately, the case of Jonas Burgos is not an isolated one. Documented by numerous human rights reports, nearly 300 people have been disappeared during the reign of President Arroyo. Edith Burgos, also representing the Desaparecidos organization, will continue her speaking tour on behalf of victims' families throughout LA before returning home to the Philippines later this month. Edith joins me in studio this morning. Welcome to Uprising.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the KPFK. And Sonalit, thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk.
Also in studio with us is Mervin Toquero. He is with the National Council of Churches in the Philippines. He has also returned recently from Washington, D.C. Welcome to Uprising, Mervin.
Thank you, Sunali.
Edith, I'd like to start with you. Tell us a little bit more about your son and his activism and why his case is so typical of what's happening in the Philippines today.
Yes, my son Jonas was abducted in April 28, and he was abducted in while he was having lunch in a big restaurant and a mall in the middle of Metro Manila. And it is typical because the abductors didn't even have masks on, and they just dragged him out while he was shouting. And it is typical that they would do this without even trying to disguise themselves because right now the culture of impunity exists in the Philippines.
Were they wearing uniforms?
No, they were in civilian clothes. Four men who were armed and a woman abducted Jonas. Mm. And Jonas was another thing that makes the case very, very typical is that Jonas was very, very outspoken. He was a member of the Patience Movement in Bulacan. That's a province in the Philippines. And this is a chapter of the Philippine Patience Movement. And this, we call this organization, KMP, has been labeled by the Philippine government as a front organization for the Communist Party of the Philippines. Mm. Although the family says that no matter what the ideology of my son, and even I question that label, no matter what the label, no matter what the ideology, it will always be wrong and it will not be right to abduct anyone.
So you found a military document saying that your son had been neutralized. Has the government admitted that they've been involved in this case?
From the very start, the government has been on denial. In fact, this case is ongoing at the Court of Appeals. We filed a case with the Supreme Court for habeas corpus and later for the writ of amparo. And the government, represented by the Office of the Solicitor General, has continually denied that Jonas is with them and that they abducted Jonas, although we have a direct link and evidence that links the military to the abduction.
Hmm. Mervin Toquero, you're with the National Council of Churches in the Philippines, and I understand that the church has also been targeted in the Philippines.
Yes, especially those who are very critical of the Arroyo administration. Actually, of the more than 900 victims of extrajudicial killings, 27 are church workers and members of the clergy. And one of them was even a former colleague at the NCCP.
And why, is the church also being targeted in addition to political activists? Is the church actively involved in the political landscape in the Philippines and criticizing the Arroyo regime?
Yes. For the NCCP, we feel that we have to lend our moral voice as a church to criticize what we see are wrong. And this has earned the ire of the government. our being outspoken for the poor, the downtrodden.
So you and Edith were currently in Washington, D.C. What did you do while you were there?
I accompanied Edith to convince the members of Congress and Senate to rethink about the budget that the U.S. is giving the Philippines. And we asked them to look into the case of Jonas, and we told them that it is a very good case. It shows how the disappearances are happening in the Philippines and how the government is trying to put roadblocks in the search for her son. And in connection, we wanted the congresspersons and the senators to put human rights conditions on the military aid they give to the Philippines.
Edith, are members of Congress aware of this type of persecution, and how did they respond to your request for human rights conditions on the aid?
From our discussions with the senior aides of this, of the congressmen and the senators, some offices are aware of this human rights violations in the Philippines. However, some Congress offices are not that aware of the extent of the violations. That is the reason why I am here, because I am living proof that there are disappearances in the Philippines.
Mm. And at this point, how typical is it in the Philippines that people who speak out are going to be targeted? What sort of atmosphere of fear has been built up? I imagine that people are basically afraid they're going to be next if they speak out.
Yes, that's right. We have 185 cases recorded by the Karapatan. That is a human rights group in the Philippines. But there are more, I think even double, because I talk to families who refuse even to file petitions for habeas corpus because they are afraid. They, in fact, I mean the military, would like to scare people into complaining and into filing cases.
Hmm. Mervyn, what about the religious community in the United States? Have you at all appealed to the religious community here in the U.S. that they need to pay attention to the attack on the churches?
Well, the churches that have a partnership with NCCP are very supportive with the issue, like the United Church, the United Methodist Church, and they have helped us in projecting the issue internationally. And they have also assisted us in taking this issue to the United Nations Human Rights Council and other various international fora.
And in fact, Edith, I'd like to ask you about just that. I mean, trying to seek justice within a government that is responsible for the injustices, I imagine, is a pretty difficult thing. So you took your case to the United Nations. What happened there?
Well, I filed information with the Working Group of Involuntary and Enforced Disappearances, and it was received by the human rights officers of that specially mandated group, mm-hmm. the WIGAID. And I am happy that the officer who received this case has been monitoring the case of Jonas. She has, in fact, called me up in the Philippines to find out if I am threatened or being harassed. The family has been threatened and harassed, too. And
how has that happened? What's the form of harassment that's been taken?
Well, I am being followed. I am being surveilled. My children also are being surveilled, and they make their presence very, very visible, which means that probably they'll not do anything, but they probably want to scare us into being quiet and not pursuing what we're doing.
But you haven't backed down.
A mother cannot give up. My son is still missing. And in our search for Jonas, we see that there are other mothers. There are a lot of children looking for their fathers. And I think we will stay and be a thorn in their side.
So your son's case has become a pretty high-profile case in the Philippines right now. Has President Arroyo at all acknowledged it?
I cannot imagine that she would ignore this, because this is all over the papers, and I think she knows very well, because I wrote her a letter from a mother to another mother. And may I say that the reason why this is really very high profile is because my husband is a very well-respected freedom fighter in the Philippines. In fact, he has been honored both by Senate and the international community.
I want to let our listeners know that Edith, my guest, whose son Jonas Burgos was abducted in the Philippines, she's going to be speaking this evening at the Rosewood United Methodist Church, 4101 Rosewood Avenue in L.A. That's tonight at 7 p.m., where you can learn more about her struggle to find her son. That's 4101 Rosewood Avenue in Los Angeles at 7 p.m. And also my other guest, Mervin Toquero, with the National Council of Churches in the Philippines. Mervin, what are the efforts within the Philippines right now to do something about this? I mean, this is clearly a very chilling atmosphere that people are working in. How are people protecting themselves, and how are people speaking out?
We always go to mobilizations. We always release statements denouncing the human rights violations that is happening in the Philippines. And actually, some organizations, including the National Council of Churches in the Philippines, have filed submissions to the UN Human Rights Council in its for its Universal Periodic Review. In the Universal Periodic Review, countries will be accounted for their compliance on international human rights covenants, and the Philippines is one of them. And we are actually monitoring this. We will be monitoring this UPR session at the Human Rights Council. We have to really show our righteous indignation regarding this issue, because human lives are at stake.
Now, Mervin, you were one of the main people that produced a document that was submitted last year, Let the Stones Cry Out, an ecumenical report on human rights in the Philippines and a call to action. How, and I understand it was submitted to a committee, the U.S. Congressional Committee on Defense. How was that report received?
I think the report was well received, and it was one of the reasons why not only the churches but other grassroots communities decided to call on their congresspersons and ask them to put human rights conditions mm-hmm. on the military aid to the Philippines.
So really the struggle is here in the United States, given that the U.S. is propping up the Arroyo regime.
Yes, yeah. Especially its military.
Finally, Edith, do you think you're going to find your son?
Yes. Hope springs eternal in the human heart, especially a mother's heart. That is the very reason why we keep on doing these things, because we know that we will find Jonas, but in God's perfect time. But we look for him in peace and love, because we have forgiven. But we must look for him, and we will exact justice.
Edith Burgos, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Also to you, Mervin Toquero, thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Again, Edith will be speaking this evening at the Rosewood United Methodist Church, 4101 Rosewood Avenue in Los Angeles. That's at 7 p.m., and you can park at 4021 Rosewood. That's 4021 Rosewood. And Mervin, you also have a suggestion for listeners to make some phone calls?
Yes. Please call Representative Howard Berman. He is the chairman of the Influential Committee on Foreign Affairs of the U.S. House of Representatives. Call 818-994-7200 and urge him to support our call to put human rights
conditions
to the
military aid. Let me repeat that number, 818-994-7200, and we will list that on our website, uprisingradio.org, later today as well. And after this week's Empire Notes, we will be joined by three feminist Cuban hip-hoppers in studio for an exclusive interview. Stay tuned. Empire Notes are weekly commentaries filed by Rahul Mahajan, author of Full Spectrum Dominance and the New Crusade. Today's commentary is about the Iraq War 5 years later.
A lot can happen in 5 years. Children who were in 7th or 8th grade during the invasion of Iraq are now deciding whether or not to enlist and be sent to Iraq to kill or die. Iraq itself has been changed beyond recognition, irrevocably altered. Depending on which study you believe, 400,000 to 1.3 million have died of violence, perhaps 25% of them at the hands of American soldiers. Over 4 million have lost their homes, half of them now refugees in foreign lands. The middle class is eviscerated and, given the collapse of the educational system, is not likely to recover in a generation even if peace is restored. So quickly have events accelerated that there are now stories that a new generation, having seen the results of the nation's descent into religious insanity, is growing up with an attitude of cynical contempt for clerics and anyone who invokes Islam to tell them what to do. And yet here in Macondo, nothing has happened and nothing will ever happen. According to the Pew Center's latest News IQ poll, only 28% of those surveyed could tell within 1,000 how many American soldiers had died in Iraq. The one thing about the Iraq War that a slim majority of the American public used to have a handle on. Unsurprisingly, this decline in the most basic of knowledge tracks a virtual cessation of news coverage in Iraq. From an average of 20% of the news in the first half of 2007 and 15% over last summer, it is now 3%, and likely to stay that way at least until after the election. Iraq is already receding into the hazy glow of memory, like Vietnam, Korea, the War of 1812. And even though this is a remarkably screwed-up attitude toward a war that is still raging, with levels of violence still roughly half what they were at the nadir of 2006, this wouldn't even bother me that much if only we had learned something from the war. Not about the difference between Sunni and Shia, not about the volatility and susceptibility to fanaticism of the Middle East, but about a heart of darkness closer to home. It is true, of course, that some people have learned some things. Insane triumphalist hawks have become moderate cautious hawks. But if you want to understand just how little we've learned overall, not individuals, but the people who craft the narratives that end up dragging all of us into them, check out the New York Times Sunday, March 16th retrospective on the Iraq invasion. It reads like a self-parody. L. Paul Bremer, Richard Perle, Danielle Pletka and Frederick Kagan, neoconservatives with the American Enterprise Institute, Kenneth Pollack, whose book The Threatening Storm was mailed by the State Department to liberal intellectuals and opinion makers all over the country to convince them of the case for war, two retired generals, a Marine lieutenant, Anthony Cordesman, longtime hawkish military consultant for Network TV, turned national security-based critic of the war, and the centrist dean of the Woodrow Wilson School at Princeton. Not only do Iraqis not exist for the New York Times, neither do real critics of the war and America's role in the world. But if you want to learn powerful lessons like good intentions are not enough, or Arabs are too crazy for democracy, that's the place for you. The Vietnam War caused a moral crisis for a large number of Americans. The Iraq War has created a moral smugness that the rest of us are not George Bush and Dick Cheney. The Vietnam War created a revulsion against the status quo of U.S. foreign policy and even for some, against the internal operation of U.S. society. The Iraq War has created a fervent appreciation of the status quo, symbolized in the newfound appreciation for Bush the Elder, one of the most immoral and cynical presidents we've ever had. The Vietnam War delegitimized the military as an institution and drew massive criticism of the military-industrial complex. The Iraq War has led to an almost unprecedented valorization of the military and no attention to the military-industrial complex, even as the military budget has metastasized. It's not that we've learned nothing. I predict that for some years to come there will be no new military adventurism, unless you count the American escalation in Afghanistan and its spillover to Pakistan. But what an opportunity we've blown, as a nation, to have Iraq be, like the Winter Soldiers wanted Vietnam to be, the place where America turned. For Empire Notes, this is Rahul Mahajan.
Empire Notes is online at www.empirenotes.org.
Modernizando lo patriarcado.
Dale, dale, dásela.
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 Candela, vanguardia mujerita haciendo escuela.
Candela.
Having relocated to the United States, Cuban hip-hop group Las Crudas Cubenzi have spent the last year and a half touring the country. Best known on the island nation for their feminist lyrics and compelling onstage personae, the three women rappers are quickly making a name for themselves in their new home. In Cuba, the influential group represented a strong feminist presence in a male-dominated underground scene and organized the female hip-hop collective Omegas Quile. Las Crudas Cubenzi, comprising of Wanda Pasa and Pelusa Olivia, haven't changed their style as they continue to advocate for women's rights with their music and poetry now in the United States. With new songs and an undying artistic ambition, Las Crudas Cubenzi carry on with their mission, playing to demonstrations, rallies, and cultural centers. Though they have performed in venues coast to coast, the group will finally debut in Los Angeles tonight. The three of them join me in studio this morning. Welcome to Uprising. And also in studio with us is Ana Kankin. She is our volunteer Spanish to English interpreter. Thanks so much, Ana.
So welcome.
So first, let me ask all three of you to tell our listeners a little bit more about Las Crudas. Why do you rap about women's rights? And how unusual is it for a group of three women like this to be performing not only in Cuba, but in the world of hip-hop?
Que si pueden decir algo sobre el conjunto y por qué hablan sobre los derechos de la mujer y qué quieren decir al mundo aquí en los Estados Unidos sobre el mundo de hip hop.
Hola, soy Olivia y gracias por la invitación.
Olivia, thank you very much for the invitation.
Sí, aquí estamos crudas desde 1999-2000, trabajando duro porque nos apasiona el mundo de hip hop. Con su revolucionario activismo.
Here we are. We've been working since 1995 to 2005, and we do this because the world of hip hop excites us with its world of activism.
So mucha conciencia racial y social, pero muchos problemas con machismo.
There's a lot of problems with racism, social racism, and there's also a lot of problems with sexism.
So, entonces, nosotras sentimos que en nuestra comunidad hip-hop cubana habían como muchos problemas que estaban sobre la mesa en las líricas de los jóvenes que hacían hip-hop, pero nadie estaba hablando de nosotras.
And we felt in the world of hip-hop that there were a lot of problems that were being discussed and brought out into the open in the world of hip-hop, but nobody was speaking about us, the women.
So you've lived in Cuba, you're from Cuba, but now you've moved to the United States for the past year and a half. Why did you come to the U.S.?
Pues son de Cuba, pero ya tienen año y medio aquí en los Estados Unidos. ¿Por qué vinieron a los Estados Unidos?
Pensamos que estamos... En los Estados Unidos, de paso. Soy Wanda Cruda.
I'm Wanda Cruda.
Ajá. Y pensamos que en estos momentos estamos de paso, solamente transitando por el
mundo.
Por el mundo. Y estamos en una misión y solamente Estados Unidos es un puente a continuar a elevar nuestras voces en otros países del mundo.
Well, we feel that we're here just as that the United States is a bridge for us, that we came here on our way to conquer the world, and this is just part of our path to reach everybody.
How have Americans responded to you? I mean, I think this is unusual for Americans to see such amazingly strong women from another country rapping about feminism and women's rights. It's not that common, at least, you know, in the mainstream.
Pues, ¿cómo ha respondido la gente de aquí a ustedes? Pues no es muy común, es algo fuera de lo normal, escuchar a mujeres hablando sobre el derecho de la mujer.
Buenos días, soy Pasa Cruda. Pues el público americano ha respondido en mi punto de vista de una manera bien positiva, pues hay como mucha hambre de escuchar a mujeres hablando sobre problemas de mujeres.
It seems to me, I'm Wanda, and it seems to me the North American audience has responded really positively that there's a lot of hunger out there to hear women
speaking and rapping about women's issues.
I want to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with the three women members of Las Crudas, Wanda Pasa and Pelusa Olivia, and they're going to be performing, by the way, tonight. It's their Los Angeles premiere at the Silver Lake Lounge, 2906 Sunset Boulevard at 9 p.m. And again, that's tonight at the Silver Lake Lounge, 2906 Sunset Boulevard in L.A. at 9 p.m. They're going to be performing with Rebels to the Grain, and they are, this is not going to be a concert not to be missed for sure. I'm wondering if the three of you, we have been listening to some of your music on our program, but I'm wondering if you could freestyle for us a little bit.
Pueden hacer una explosión aquí.
Vamos allá.
Aquí estamos en KPFK in LA, La Cruda, representando hip hop cubano on the ground. Tú sabes, aquí estamos dándole la mano y sintiendo como las hermanas y los hermanos nos van respondiendo, nos van sintiendo. Y aquí estamos nuestros hip hop haciendo freestyle, representando.
Hey, tú sabes, vengo yo, esta es la negra, la que sé con los, y te digo que somos más que dos, somos mujeres haciendo lo que quieren. Mira, mira cómo vamos, aquí seguimos porque resistimos y no nos vamos. Sigue el machismo, tú ves bajando, seguimos las mujeres, las que estamos dominando. Ángeles, que bola LA, somos crudas, que estamos la ley. Wow, de Cuba la cruda.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much. That is Wanda Pasa and Pelusa Las Crudas Cubenzi, and they are joining me in studio for an interview. They're going to be performing tonight at Silver Lake Lounge, 2906 Sunset Boulevard in LA at 9 p.m., and they've already performed earlier in the week. So let me ask the three of you what your plans are. You said the United States is just one stop in your journey to conquer the world. Where do you plan to conquer next?
Parece que entendieron eso.
So, Latinoamérica, por seguro, como México, y seguir, porque respetamos muchísimo lo que están haciendo los jóvenes y las jóvenes en Latinoamérica, en hip hop consciente. So, hay mucha gente y mucha comunidad moviéndose y tratando de...
For sure we're going to be going to Mexico and then farther down to the south, because there's a lot of people that we really respect doing a lot of great work, a lot of men and young men and women doing wonderful work, and so we want to go down there and be there with them.
Now, when you were in Cuba, you were not only performing, but I understand you were also organizing. And tell our listeners about the hip-hop collective Omegas Kile. And is this something that you plan on doing wherever you go?
Tengo entendido que ustedes, aparte de hacer sus espectáculos, que también estaban organizando en Cuba. Entonces, por favor... Dime algo sobre Omega Kile y lo que piensan hacer en el futuro con eso.
Te digo, Omega Kile es un colectivo compuesto por mujeres, MCs, DJs, poetas. Entonces, aquí en Estados Unidos nos encontramos 5 integrantes del colectivo y estuvimos juntas en un tour por Nueva York, West Coast, y en el futuro... Estamos preparando un festival de hip-hop en cubano. Filadelfia, de hip-hop cubano en Filadelfia, del 16 al 20 de abril, Welcome Everybody. Y entonces estamos como, hay 2 integrantes del grupo que están en Cuba, y...
Bueno. Let's see if I can remember all this. Well, we're part of a collective of women, poets and artists. And here in the United States, we've gotten together with 5 other collectives. We're going to be traveling from New York to the West Coast, and we're planning on doing a festival from the 16th to the 20th of April in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Yeah, a ver qué más.
Y entonces estamos, las 2 integrantes del colectivo que están en Cuba, estamos como...
Conectadas.
Nosotras desde acá y ellas desde allá, y estamos como haciendo trabajo... Juntas.
Cool. So we're creating a network of the 2 collectives here and in Cuba, and we're working together and to become something stronger.
Mm. So Omega Kile es una hermandad de mujeres que, aunque estemos separadas, continuamos como vibrando
So,
juntas.
So Omega Chile is a what did you say?
Hermandad.
It's a sisterhood. A sisterhood that even though we're separate, we're working together and we're continuing to work and grow.
Mujeres en hip hop cubano.
And women in Cuban hip hop.
So I have to ask this. It's my last question. So Fidel has stepped down and his brother Raul has taken over. You're outside Cuba now. Maybe you can answer this. What do you think about the future of your country of origin?
Who knows?
Parece que no entendieron. Que la pregunta es que, bueno, ya que Fidel ha retirado y Raúl está vigente, pues, ¿qué piensan ustedes sobre el futuro de Cuba en relación al mundo?
¿Qué va a pasar aquí con Obama, Hillary, los demócratas?
Like, what's going to happen knows? Here? We don't, who knows? We
who
don't
knows? Know. The governments, you know, the governments are really complicated, and for us it's impossible to know what will happen.
Sorpresas.
Surprises. Mm-hmm.
I want to remind our listeners again that tonight's concert is at Silver Lake Lounge, 2906 Sunset Boulevard in L.A. Crudas Cubenzi make their Los Angeles debut with Rebels to the Grain. The show begins at 9 p.m. And finally, what is your message, the three of you, to young women, particularly in the Los Angeles area, and women of color?
Bueno, que ¿cuál es su mensaje a las mujeres jóvenes aquí y particularmente a las mujeres de color?
Pues le decimos a las mujeres de color, le decimos a las mujeres latinas, le decimos a las mujeres queer, le decimos a las madres solteras que vamos para adelante, vamos a levantarnos, vamos a unirnos, a hacer puentes y vamos a continuar resistiendo y en la lucha y transformar todo lo que está sucediendo en el mundo de alguna forma en arte. Y vamos a ser más fuertes.
Alzar las voces.
Voices.
To raise the voices, we say to the women of color, to the Latina women, to the queer women, that we're going to move forward, we're going to move together, we're going to create bridges within art and in every way to become stronger and to raise our voices.
Well, we are out of time. I want to thank the three of you very much again for joining
us today.
Hopefully you have a good turnout tonight at Silver Lake Lounge, 2906 Sunset Boulevard at 9 p.m. For Sonali, subversive thought for the day, I'd like to quote actress Hermione Gingold, who once said, "Fighting is essentially a masculine idea. A woman's weapon is her tongue." And that's actress Hermione Gingold. That's Sonali's subversive thought for the day. Thanks so much to Wanda Pasa and Pelusa Olivia, and also to Ana Konkin, our volunteer Spanish to English interpreter. You've been listening to Uprising. Gabriel San Roman is our assistant producer. Tamika Zoki is our engineer. You can hear an audio stream from this program on our website, uprisingradio.org, after 10 a.m. today. And you can email us at mail@uprisingradio.org. CDs of the show are available at pacificaradioarchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. I'm your host and producer, Sonali Kohatkar. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks to Las Crudas Cubenzi.
Okay. Thank you.